Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hello, listeners of the Mad Scientist Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, joined as always by my co-host, Marie Mayhew, and this week joined by a special guest, Rabia Chowdhury, attorney, the creator of A Non-Story, and also podcaster. You have three successful podcasts. The latest one, The Hidden Gin, that I have been just demolishing as I play Minecraft every night here this week. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Hi, Chris. Hi, Marie. How are you guys?
We're
excited.
We're a little excited. We're pretty excited to have you on the show here. Very thankful you came on. And it's going to be Halloween, which is you know, my favorite holiday. So I'll be handing out candy virtually, I guess, to kids this year. We haven't figured out how we're going to do it. I think we're just going to leave like full-size candy bars on our table outside, and then as kids come by to get them, we're just going to be like, take one, and you know, if they take more, we can't do anything, but what are you going to do?
You're all slamming your shoe against the door. Hey, you kids, just one.
Right, yeah,
do you think
seriously.
Are kids like trick-or-treating this year? I figure parents would be like, nope, not happening.
We're not.
Yeah. I don't know. We bought a lot of candy, but a lot of that might just be like depression candy for what also happens next week. We'll see what, that's, you know, right. Yeah. During the week, we're just going to be anxiety eating all the full-size Twix and Snickers we bought.
We still need all the candy. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's going to be fun stuff. So tell us a little bit here about, I guess first off, before we get into your new show, tell us a little bit, or tell our listeners a little bit, who, if they may not know you from your other works, how you got involved in podcasting and kind of what you're working on now.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm an attorney by profession, and I practiced immigration and civil rights law most of my career. But when I was in law school back in the late 1990s and 2000s, my younger brother's best friend, Adnan Syed, was arrested in Baltimore, Maryland for the murder of a classmate. And since 1999, I've been advocating for his exoneration because I believe he's innocent. And that story eventually turned into the podcast Serial, which was a huge hit, a global hit. It was the first podcast I ever heard. I didn't even know what a podcast was until Serial came out. What was that, 5-6 years ago? And when Serial came out, it gave us the case a lot of attention. It helped us a lot in terms of advocating for him, but it didn't get us to where we needed to go. So there were a couple of lawyers I met online who were writing about the case. They had gotten just really fascinated with it. So I said, listen, you want to team up? Let's work on the case together. So we started our own podcast called Undisclosed about 5.5 years ago, where we were just going to work on Adnan's case, basically. And we did like 30 or 40 episodes on Adnan's case. And then we started getting requests from Innocence Projects and defendants and families and to look at their clients, their innocent clients' cases. And so we just couldn't say no. So in 5.5 years, we have reinvestigated and covered about 22 cases. And we've assisted in 10 exonerations so far. So that's like kind of like the main thing I do. That's my main part. It's become my career now. It's become my career to do the innocence work and do the podcast. So this new podcast, The Hidden Gin, has like absolutely nothing to do with that work. And I think it came out of left field for a lot of people who know me.
First off, the fact that you were able to kind of take that, I mean, the work you do is so laudable and so fascinating, I think, and so needed. I mean, I remember
10 exonerations.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's so cool.
Our latest one's today. So I was very excited to hear.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations. Oh, and congratulations to the exonerated.
Yeah.
Too.
Seriously, oh my goodness. Yeah, it's interesting, actually. You were probably one of the first voices we heard on podcasts as well. I know Serial was my first podcast.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That was it. That was the sort of the defining moment for me. And I remember I had broken my ankle and I couldn't go anywhere. And I was sitting at home and it was Christmas. And so I was wrapping up presents and I was starting to get bored. And my husband was like, well, you should try this podcast. I was like, what's a podcast? You know, I don't want Joe Rogan or something like that. And they're like, he's like, no, I've heard it's really, really good. And I listened to one. And then like, I would say about 2.5 hours in, I was like trying to map out stuff on the back of the wrapping paper.
Right.
And I have been sort of down that rabbit hole. I think there's something about the story and the way it was told and the involvement with the family and the characters. And it just, to me, it was like, it was really revelatory. Yes. I'm the gateway drug.
Yeah. I think Serial was a gateway drug to a lot of podcast listeners, for first time listeners, and also podcast creators. I mean, so many people, I think, launched their podcast after Serial.
Yeah. And just sort of research junkies, like people like I know myself and Chris. I mean, I remember thinking afterwards, like, well, why? You know, I think we can find out if there was that payphone at the Best Buy.
Right.
I think you can find that out. And like just finding sort of an outlet for that and having it become a passion has really, I know it's changed my life. Just being able to do that. So I think it's awesome. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, now we do this on weekends, Marie, and some weeknights. So it's pretty great. Oh my goodness.
But we have fun. And I think it's to me, it's more interesting to being able to use that side of your brain and think about things and do what you really love to do than the day job sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's so interesting. I started out, like, I always listen to, because, okay, so our show, we cover all kinds of weird, spooky stuff, the kind of strange side of history and all this other stuff. And I think that kind of really, the reason that I fell in love with those kinds of stories is because my family, having come from Italy, and then my grandma, not really being originally Italian, but being from kind of Croatia and, at the time, today now is Croatia, but at the time was, Yugoslavia, and just having kind of, when my grandma would tell us stories of her time being a kid, or she would give us, superstitious, like folk remedies for things, or, don't do that. Right. Like that was always like, that was taught at the same time that I was taught, like, this is what an electron is. Right. And Nona says, sprinkle lemon on stuff and you won't get diabetes. Like, that was taught like side by side.
God, we use a lot of lemon too.
In our
folk remedies. It's crazy.
I'm telling you, it's like I don't know what it is. It must be like medicine isn't supposed to taste good. So lemon makes your mouth pucker. So I guess it's like mega medicine. I don't really understand it, but I've always loved hearing the mythologies of other countries or other cultures, and getting even just like personal, like people's individual stories, I don't know if you've ever had this. I love hearing people tell me what their parents told them about the holidays. So interesting. Especially when you think like, okay, everyone has this one story, say of, like Halloween even, right? Like in my family, Halloween, when I was a kid, my mom would always tell us that actually back in Italy, Halloween was like almost like a second Christmas, where a witch would come and presents in your shoes. Like they'd leave their shoes outside and the witch would come and give them candy in the shoes. Unless they were bad and they would get like, I don't know, something else, right? I have no idea, but coal or whatever it is.
I actually assumed that in Italy, because it's like such a religious country, that it would be some, like Halloween would be one of those like totally taboo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't celebrated as Halloween. It was celebrated as like another thing. And actually, okay, we're getting just deep into tangents here. The city that my mom is from in Italy, Bari, actually has the bones of Saint Nicholas.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Like they stole them. And so when I was growing up,
as
like,
you do,
we visited, but we visited Bonnie and I was like 12. And my mom's like, yeah, this is Santa's grave. I was like, what are you talking about? Santa's still up there.
Which really explains quite a bit.
Right. Actually. Serious stuff. Anyways, I go through all those tangents to say, your new show is on the gin, right?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit what made you interested in that? What made you want to do a show on that?
Yeah.
Well, so what happened was first of all, as far as like the gin, the people who don't understand like what a gin is, the closest thing in the Western imagination is the genie. That's where it comes from. It comes from the gin. And the gin is a creature that is not just part of folklore from many, many different parts of the world, from like the Middle East, North Africa, South Asia, all the way to East Asia. It's also like part of religious tradition and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you know, just the way some kids have grown up swapping ghost stories around the campfire in my community, every time a couple kids would get together, we'd swap gin stories. And they could be terrifying. They could be funny. They could be all kinds of things, because gin can be like all kinds of things, but we believe that they are an actual real thing. They're a real creation. And God made people, God made angels, and then God made jinn. Like, it's literally in our scripture. So it's like that serious of a thing. But the reason I decided to do this show, which is completely unrelated to like my actual professional life or what people know me for, is because I am a huge fan of Lore by Aaron Mankey. Mm-hmm. And I love Aaron, and I love the show, and I love that it's like 30 minutes and little bites of this, and it's so rich and has so much in there. And I remember we used to talk online a lot, and the first time I met him a few years ago, it was at a podcast convention or something. And I said, you know, have you ever thought about like doing folklore from other parts of the world? And I said, for example, there is like thousands of years of jinn lore. And he's like, I have no idea what that is, and I would not want to... I wouldn't want to go into somebody else's culture, like as a white guy who maybe not understanding it well, and I don't want to like do anything. And so about a year or so goes by, we just had a conversation, and I told him how it was, what it was, and how I had all these books on it. And about a year goes by, and he circled back to me. He said, hey, would you do a podcast with me about the jinn? And he was going to executive produce, but it would basically be mine. And I thought about it, and I was like, you know, it would kind of be fun to do something that's not like life or death situation, something that's a more creative project. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So actually, like we started talking about this 2 years ago, but 2020 was the year where I was not taking a lead on one of my innocence cases. My colleagues are. And I had the time to really do the research and script it and record it. And so this whole year really has been about producing The Hidden Jinn. And that's how it's come about. And Aaron Mankey is, in fact, a executive producer on it. Excuse me.
The one thing that I really like about the jinn stories, and especially your show too, the way that I guess it talks about it, or kind of the stories, to me, it's akin to opening up, you know, for the first time, getting back into like a really good novel with a really strong world, right? Because like you said, these stories, these concepts and these ideas are thousands and thousands of years old. They have been fleshed out by, you know, thousands of authors and thinkers over time. And it really is like discovering, because, you know, especially with a show like ours, where we do a lot of research on, you know, the weirder side of things. And we actually did a whole series on like Christian demonology, because that was something that was something that for me, again,
we even got to talk to the Church of Satan.
But you know, it is really like breaking into a whole new world of thought and ideas. For people that want to learn more about it and about these topics and things, where do you suggest they start? Do you think?
I actually think the podcast is a good place to start. Because it's if you kind of jump in on your own, like onto the internet, it's gonna seem very overwhelming. There is really a lot out there, and you know, as I was doing the research, look, even as somebody who grew up in a culture where this was like a thing and we all talked about it and joked about it and swapped stories, I didn't realize how far back it went, how rich the tradition is, how much literature and art and just how many stories there are connected to this until I started really researching for this show. So there's just so much there. And, you know, from the very first episode, I go into Jewish apocryphal literature because that is heavily has lots of jinn, you know, imagery in it. But it goes beyond that. It's like starts from, you know, Babylonia and Assyria. And it just so there's just so much there. I feel like this show is actually, especially this first season that I did, what I really wanted to do was kind of make it accessible to everybody. But even people who, I mean, I've heard from so many people who are Muslim and they've grown up with this, but you know, knowing about jinn, but they did not know everything that I've kind of packed into the show. So they're still learning a lot, but I think this is actually a really good introduction. And then what I do is, if you go on the Grim and Mild website, which is Aaron Mankey's site, and my podcast is there, I have a list of resources. So everything I reference, you can go into those sources, and a lot of those things are actually available online. A lot of the books and articles and stuff that I reference. So you could start there, and I think that would probably be an easy way into this world. It's a big, big world.
Yeah, and it's, I think the thing that is so interesting to me about it is it's almost beyond duality, because, you know, I think Western culture, you have angels, you have devils, you have ghosts, you have sort of more binary types of right. deities, and the jinn is none of those things. And that's what I was like in just like in any reading I've done about it, that was the thing that I was wrapping my head around, is I'm like, well, they're not human, but they exist with humans, but also they're not devils. They are accountable to God, but they're not ghosts, but you can't see them. And I'm like, well, then, like, I think to me, that's like a fascinating, rich topic of what belief, and like, well, what are they then? What do they do? What are they capable of?
You know, it's interesting. I think, again, when I was growing up, we always heard about jinn stories, like scary stories. And the more I've learned about it, exactly what you're saying is true. The jinn are no more really scarier than human beings. And human beings can be angels and can be demons as well. I mean, we can be some of the worst monsters, right, ever. We can be the scariest things that we should fear.
So we've seen in 2020, yes.
As we have, yeah, yes. Actually, for a number of years now.
Yes.
The jinn are basically the same. They can be good, they can be bad, and most of them are probably just like most of us, which is a little bit good, a little bit bad, and just, you know, just regular old folks living their lives. But they just exist in a plane, and they're older than us. Like, so, you know, they predate us in terms of like their creation versus the creation of man. But it's interesting, given how powerful jinn are, how long they can live thousands of years according to the tradition. The fate tradition says that even so, and when I say fate tradition, I mean all the Abrahamic traditions around this, the Jewish, Christian, Muslim, is that man is still the most superior creation. We are still superior to them, even though they are powerful in ways that we kind of wish we were, you know, like we could fly and we could do all kinds of things, but we can't, but we're still kind of superior to them. So it's interesting.
What is that superior? Like, what is the thing that makes us, from the stories you've heard or from sort of the research you've done, what's the thing that makes them?
The scholars have talked about this for hundreds of years, about why is it that God said to the angels and the jinn that this creature I'm creating, Adam, is still going to be superior to you. And what they landed on was this. Jinn do have free will, just like us, but they don't have imagination. So they know what's happened now. They know what's happened in the past. They have an incredible network that they can, like, if they need to find information, they can get information and that's why people who use jinn, like in reading palms and that, there are people who do that kind of stuff. Apparently, they can ask jinn about people's past and they can find it. But jinn cannot imagine things. So human beings, our imagination, our ability to imagine things that don't exist, that could exist, that we can create things, they can't do that. Only we can do that. And it's interesting, even in the stories where the jinn are like, the first episode I talk about how. The legend is that King Solomon enslaved millions of jinn to build all these incredible, you know, cities and all the wonders that he had. But he had to enslave them to do it. They didn't know how to do it on their own. They couldn't do it on their own. Hmm. He had to tell them that this is how it's going to be. And they were just like kind of worker bees. So it's that imagination. Our intellect is superior.
That's amazing. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting that it reminds me, because again, like, so we really dig deep, and I love, again, all of the old sort of, my big thing, like, if I was ever going to start another show, I think it would probably be on kind of Christian theology, and not really theology, but like mythology, right? Like,
right.
You know, all of that kind of deep stuff, because I've always been fascinated by it. Again, probably because Nona was like, you know, don't do that, a demon will get you. But you know, it's very similar, I think, too, to kind of a lot of religious practices have that idea of creator, he or she at the very beginning, they have imperfect creations before they make humans, right? So, you know, the giants, the jinn, the whatever, right? And when they get it right with humans, you know, and some would consider that to be a tremendous mistake, you know, but when they get it right, right, but when they get it right with us, then we kind of have dominion over other parts of creation. But it is really interesting, though, like Marie was saying, and you kind of fleshed out more, they are kind of they're like a third class between, you know, because in like the Christian tradition, it became very simplified. It was like there's the good and there's the bad. But even in stories or historical tales of, ancient, say demons or even angels, there is an aspect to those creatures too that are benevolent sometimes or terrifying, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know, so it's so funny that I guess, you know, again, these are all, they're kind of all stories pulling from the same, you know, from the same well, right? From the same source material, or the same initial kernel, and they still diversify to such an extent.
I really expected when I did this, first of all, you know, I did expect that, oh, this is going to be a podcast mostly like Muslims listen to. And I don't think any Muslims listen to, but barely any. I mean, there are some, but it's mostly people who are not. And I just know that just from like all the reviews that we've gotten that people have left. So most of them are people who are like, I've never heard of this before. I'm hearing this for the first time and I'm fascinated. But what I did not expect was that it would resonate with people of so many different backgrounds. I've talked to now people who are like are Hindu, people who are animists. They come from like the Filipino tradition. People who I did a whole interview with a father and daughter from Indonesia, and like so from all over the world. And I'm getting messages from people who are like, these creatures you're describing, the qualities they have or the things they do, they sound exactly like this creature in our culture. Like it's like the same thing, but this is what we call it versus this is what you call it, and I'm like, you know, there's something there that's connecting all these things. And even the stories that are the most terrifying, right? I mean, like there seem to be like, you know, there's always a vampire figure, right? Almost every culture has its own version of the vampire. Almost every culture has its own version of the succubus, almost every culture. So, in some way we're all kind of, we've all experienced like kind of same, similar types of phenomena. We just think of them differently, understand them differently.
And what's fascinating is that while humans have more imagination, they can't see the jinn, right? That the jinn is invisible to them,
right.
But the jinn can see everything else. And that to me is like this really strange, again, just, it's a fascinating kind of
duality. Well, it's kind of like how if you believe in angels and God, they can see you, but you can't see them. I mean, same thing.
True. Yeah. But it's, I would say like, but those are more like, again, the deity or sort of in the hierarchy, they're more above or, you know, they are semi-deities. That's a great term. But I almost think of like the jinn the jinn is more similar to humans different. Yeah.
We definitely have different, we have different powers. We have much more limited lifespans. We have much more limited physical abilities. But, you know, there's so many stories, I can't even tell you, of jinn who have joined, like, human centers of learning to learn, of universities, of, like, other centers. It's really fascinating. I hear this all the time from people that, oh, yeah, like, in this one school here, you know, there was a student who everybody knew it was a djinn. That student was a djinn. I mean, like, I've heard this from different parts of the world. There's older, what? Much older. Yeah, there's older. And I think in one of the episodes, I do talk about how, I can't remember exactly what part of the world, but I think it's somewhere in the Middle East where there's an entire city that's buried underground that apparently is full of just thousands of year old scrolls that are scrolls written by left behind by human beings. But at night, it lights up underground because the djinn are studying those scrolls. They want to learn from us things that they can't learn. They don't know. They're just not that bright. I think that's what it is. They're just not that bright.
But they're made of fire, which is the other irony, right? Like, yeah. I know, but that's to me, that's like, but they're not, they, yeah, no, I just, I'm still tripping out on them going to university.
But, you know, if they want to show you what they look like, they can reveal themselves. And also there are people who are able to do like conjurations and this and that. Forget that. I set up a Gmail account once I started this podcast saying, hey, if you have any stories, let me know. And I have gotten some of the craziest stories, including from people I know and I never suspected. People who say, listen, I see them. I see them around me. And here's the thing. To be absolutely honest, I have never seen anything that I could think was a djinn. I had some weird experiences that I couldn't explain, but I've never been like, oh, I saw a djinn, or I saw a ghost, or I've never experienced it in that sense. But now people I know have started coming forward feeling, I think, emboldened by the podcast saying, I just want you to know that I can see them everywhere. I'm like, oh my God. Oh, F. You know, like, it's like, what?
Right? Yeah. No, okay. When we come back from our first ad break here, we're going to go more into spooky stories of the djinn and more on people seeing djinn.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style. And together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
And we're back.
I was going to say, I did tell, I was talking to my friend at work, and I was telling him, I'm really excited. We're going to talk to Rabia. She's got this new podcast. And he's like, what is it about? And he's like, and I'm like, oh, it's about the djinn. And he's like, oh, I wouldn't do that. I don't know if you should do that. And I'm like, why? And I'm like, why would he? He's Muslim. And he was like, nope, nope. He's like, nope. And I'm like, what? You should listen. You do have a story. And you just got to be. And he's like, it was really funny.
You're not supposed to talk about it. Not supposed to talk about him. Yeah.
But he was very like, you know, I'm so used to seeing him in a very certain light. Like, you know, very like very logical, very business, transparent. And, you know, he's the one who's with the PowerPoint, can be in the meeting, and he's in the suit. Right. And then he's like, okay, this one time. And it was like almost like a campfire story. He's like, you know, my cousin, and he was making fun of the djinn. And then he, in the middle of the night, he woke up, he was fully awake, but there was something gripping his arms and he couldn't move. And I was like, oh, you know, and he was like, sleep and paralysis. Then, and he's like, but I'm not going to, I'm not going to say anything else. I'm not like, you shouldn't be talking about this stuff. Well, and I'm like, well, you should listen to our podcast. He's like, I will, but I'm not going to tell anyone.
I've had a lot of my friends and most other like Muslim friends and people in Muslim community who are like, I will not listen. I'm too scared to listen. You're opening a door into a portal you don't want to go into. And I'm like, listen, I've been researching and writing about this for like 8 months now. I'm okay. So I think you'll be okay.
That's the funny thing, right? So on our show, like we said before, we started out doing research for Astonishing Legends. The guys from Astonishing Legends, maybe they are more open to the world of the weird or something, maybe because they're not so snarky towards it on their show. They've had experiences now. And we'll call Scott and Forrest, and they're just like, nah, man, this spooky podcast and stuff, it's too real. It's too real.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah. Like, wow. I mean, not to that extent, but like, you know, they've had really scary experiences now. They went to the Sally House, which is like a famously haunted location, and captured like a pretty upsetting EVP, like a demon screaming at them, it sounded like.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So like they've had real experiences and I'm over here, you know,
poking fun.
I don't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like covered in demon candles with witchcraft books all over the house. And I can't even get a book, you know, I can't get a cup to move.
Right.
What's
right.
going
That's
on?
Exactly
people?
How I feel. That's how I felt when I started this. So for the 2 years prior, you know, when I told my husband I was going to do this, and my husband is a totally religious guy, he was just like, oh my God, we're going to get possessed. Oh my God, we're all going to get possessed. We were all terrified before I started. But once I started it, I wasn't scared at all. I haven't been scared. And, you know, I get asked all the time, oh, I want to listen, but is it scary? And to be honest, I'm not scared by it. I would ask other, like, do you guys think it's a scary show? I don't think it is.
I don't think it's that. I think it's more... But see, but that's the thing, though. We're coming at it from the position of, like, this is stuff that we've... Like, when I was a kid, I was terrified about reading about, like, demons and ghosts and all that stuff. Because I thought, you read about them, like you said, you open up a portal to that other world, they're going to keep coming out. As far as I can tell, though, either my key card keeps getting denied or something. It's just not happening for me. I can't get a portal big enough.
We're just not that interesting, Chris. We're just not that interesting.
I guess so. Well, they know that we'll talk, right? But then Scott and Forrest talk. I don't even know. Anyways, but yeah, I don't think it's scary. I think it's more like
the more you think about it, like afterwards, you start thinking about it, it starts to kind of play over in your head a little bit. And that's where it starts to get a little like unsettling or a little like, that's where it's scary. It's not like in the listening and the learning, but it's like after you've disseminated it and you've kind of packed it away and you've made sense of it, you know, it's sort of the remnants of the things that you can't really get your head around or fully explain that start to play on me a little bit.
I think, though, too, it does depend. So we actually, it's funny, we probably, besides like the demonology kind of history of that stuff side of things, the other part of the world of the weird, I guess, that I've gotten the most sort of dip my toe in, like, you know, come get me, is looking for aliens, right? Like, I always loved UFO stories, and I practically have like a beacon on my house, like, come get me, you know? And they will not come down, but anyways... But that being said, one of the first big long form series we did actually was about a UFO sighting that happened on my grandmother-in-law's farm in New Hampshire.
Oh, wow.
And during grad school, I lived there alone. And so we have this, like, it's a really funny, it's a self-published book by this crazy old guy who's like, you know, me and my wife would talk to the aliens at McDonald's and they told us to go do this stuff. And it's funny in the daytime, but at nighttime at the place where it happened alone in the mountains of New Hampshire, you know, it feels a little bit realer. You know what I mean? Like it gets a little bit more scary. So, so I don't know. I don't know how to.
So one thing, you know, one thing I've learned is one thing I've learned is at least when it comes to the realm of the djinn is the most djinn are just kind of living their lives in their lane. They're not interested in interacting with us. They got their stuff to do, whatever. There are some who will want to mess with you. And then there are some who really do want to try to harm people. And even that happens for specific reasons. Like, so sometimes it'll be because somebody actually like summoned them, conjured them, invited them in and then directed them to harm somebody. Other times it'll be because you accidentally like hurt a djinn or insulted them, like peed under a tree where they live or something weird. And a third way is if like they fall in love with you and they just get obsessed and they start stalking you. But apparently, you know, the way that the djinn know that they need for a person's, they need a crack in a human psyche to really get into you. And that crack is fear. So what I've read is that, when djinn really want to harm you, they try to scare you, even if they know they can't really harm you, but they want to scare you. So they scare you, and that fright lowers your defenses, lowers your ability to, like, you know, emotionally and mentally defend yourself. And then that's how they can actually get you in some way or another. But so since I learned that, I'm like, I don't know. I guess I'm just, I haven't been scared yet. And I know, like, every time I say that, I'm like, I'm tempting fate. Something terrible is going to happen to me one night.
I love it. No, it's good.
But I'm still like, it's like you. I feel like either my veil, like they say some people have a really thin veil. Like they're much more sensitive. They can sense things. They've sensed it all their lives and their children. And I'm just not that person. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. It's.
Well, maybe that's why we think it's so interesting though, too. It's like, because I don't know, because I think I am relatively the same way. I like to scare myself, or I like to try and scare myself, mm-hmm. but I'm not like in researching this stuff, and I have never seen it or had any kind of encounter or anything along those lines.
Yeah, I don't know if anything will scare me after grad school. Like, I don't know if I can be scared anymore after taking thermo and at a graduate level.
I really am more scared of people, I'll be honest. The world is full of crazy people.
We've got plenty enough to be scared of in this realm.
This is actually true. I do get more frightened in the stuff I do around true crime. I mean, the crimes that I deal with, the homicides I have to study. I mean, they're terrifying. Those are terrifying.
I think, yeah, the study of human nature is really, yeah, yeah, of sociopathic behaviors.
Well, I don't think I've ever annoyed a djinn, but I've definitely, you know, I'm sure I've gotten close to one or two psychopaths on the subway, you know, like, I don't know if I've ever scared a djinn. So actually, one thing that's really interesting is, so from the Western, I guess, sort of American European tradition, we see the effect of kind of Christian demonology, you know, Abrahamic demonology, I guess I should say, generally on later supernatural beliefs. So, mm-hmm. you know, UFO stories are extremely similar to witchcraft stories. Right, and, right. you know, some people with giant crazy hair on the History Channel will say that that is evidence that, you know, all of these things have been happening forever and they're all one thing. But one actually really interesting part of that is in other cultures, like, you know, one area that it's kind of funny that we have a lot of info about kind of reports of modern day supernatural things from is Japan, mm. right? Because they have such a large there's a lot of people that love that kind of, you know, the horror stories that come out of, say, Korea and Japan. And then they kind of, you know, we mix and we get their stories and things like that. And if you compare the two, they are significantly different in their themes, in their motifs, in kind of some of those common tropes that come around. I'm wondering, actually, or I guess I'm kind of interested, do you think, say, in kind of, I guess, and I know this is a crazy question because it's like the, you know, the varieties of faith and peoples that believe in the djinn are vast. But I guess just even from your own kind of background, do you find that those motifs and stories play out more in, say, modern day stories? Like, besides stories of djinn, like, I don't know, do you know anyone from like your family or community or whatever who have ever seen like a UFO? Is that story similar to a djinn story? How is that playing?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if UFO sightings are like a thing from my family's from Pakistan, which is a South Asian subcontinent. Mm-hmm. I don't know if UFO sightings are actually a thing in that culture, in that area. I've never really done any research into that. But I do think this, I think it's interesting that every culture experiences phenomena that's similar, but it's kind of translated through their own cultural context. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people will describe the same thing. They'll just understand it differently. I do know that there are lots of stories of djinn that have abducted humans that you could say seems very similar to alien abduction stories. But those stories don't involve like spinning circular, you know, discs in the air necessarily. Mm. And I also wonder, I don't know enough about, honestly, even UFO stories here in the West to know whether those stories actually existed before the advent of like the airplane, or is this something that like suddenly after we had things that, you know, we knew there were like machines that could fly in the air, we're like, oh, okay, well then maybe there's aliens. But 300 years ago, did people see like, you know, flying saucers? I don't know. Or is that something did we just conjure that? Did we just start thinking about it in that way after we were able to get into the air?
That's the fascinating thing. 300 years ago, or even longer before, people were being abducted by witches. Oh, right? Okay. That's what those stories were, or by demons. They were just being like, They were plucked out of the
air. Spirited away.
Exactly. Yeah. They were spirited away. They were removed from their bed. They'd appear in the forest or wherever. Weird stuff would be going on around them. Weird stuff would happen to them. And then they'd go back to bed. And actually, at the midpoint between, say, when we were in the air with, like, blimps and, you know, hot air balloons and stuff like that, people were being abducted into hot air balloons.
Oh, there you go.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of that it is like what you're saying. That the lens that people view it through is the lens of their technology. You know, one favorite story that we always go back to on the show is this guy. Did you ever see the movie The Mothman Prophecies?
I think I vaguely remember seeing it a long time ago, but I don't remember much of it. Yeah,
it's pretty scary. Not least of all because Richard Gere is in it. But it's scary.
Okay.
So the Mothman Prophecies.
I should watch it this Halloween then.
It's good. It's really good. It's very scary. Okay. The story that it's based off of is this rash of sightings of an alien creature thing in Virginia, in West Virginia, rather. And it's, you know, the Mothman. But one of the stories is of this guy, Woody Jarenberger, who gets abducted into an alien ship. But when the ship comes to pick him up, it's like it lands and it's all cool and whatever. But then when the door to the ship opens, it opens up like a 1930s Ford. You know what I mean? Like it creaks open and it pushes down and it slams the ground. And he gets brought into the ship and he's like, wow, this is really high tech because they have like, you know, green screen computers that are, you know, from like the 1970s. Right. All of those stories are, I guess, go through that lens. But yeah, no, I would love to hear an episode on that. If I can make a plug for myself, I would love to hear an episode on modern day stories, I guess, or how, you know, like have there been, I guess, modern sightings of gin, or, you know, one gin terrifying a community or helping a community even.
Oh, I mean, like there are, because the gin, you know, are ancient, right? So if there's a gin, let's say, that haunts a certain, like an area, a region is known, right? There's a place in Oman called Bahla. It's one of the most haunted places on earth. And they say that the jinn are just they're everywhere. They're just popping out of the walls there. But they've lived they've lived there for thousands of years because the jinn can live 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years. In fact, of the millions of jinn that Solomon enslaved, many of them they say he captured in vessels, and they might still be there, right? I mean, waiting to be uncorked and leashed onto this world, really pissed off at us as human beings. But there isn't really a distinction between like a modern experience that a community might have with jinn, like a mass experience, and something that happened 300 years ago, because it is ostensibly the same jinn. The same jinn have been living there all these times. What is interesting to me is, like, you know, when I think about like UFO and kind of like, I mean, to me, the UFO imagery is like it's so technological, it's so sterile, and jinn, whereas like the stories around jinn, like even the abductions for people who have been, say they have been abducted into the jinn world and then returned later, are so fantastical. They're so rich. I mean, imagine, you know how like a Persian carpet is rich? It's like that, but it's just like full of color, full of the most insane creatures, like trees that have heads growing off of them. Some of the art that I have encountered doing my research, it's so fantastical. I've never seen anything like it, even like in our own, like, you know, film in Hollywood and stuff like that. I'm like, who the hell thought this shit up? And it's like hundreds of years old, but like crazy creatures you'd never think, right? Creatures that have mouths on their butts and, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And palaces made of things that you can't imagine. And the descriptions are so rich, and they're so completely polar opposite, the imagery around UFO stuff. It's really interesting to me. And I don't know, I guess it's a reflection of those cultures, because those cultures are very colorful, right? And here's another thing. I know when UFO stories, there is some element sometimes of like some kind of sexual prodding and exploration and stuff that the aliens do, right? I've heard that. That's happened sometimes. But in Jinn land, it is like sexy times all the time. I mean, those stories are so full of sex and sexuality, I cannot tell you. Everybody's having sex. Like, the people are having it with the jinn are having it with the jinn. I mean, it's just, it's like one of the main pastimes in their world.
Oh, my God.
That's why they live so long.
Maybe.
I've been teleported to Bangland. What's happening? Oh, my God. I thought you guys were religious. That's so funny.
I swear the most religious people are like the horniest people. I don't know how it happens, but it's true. But it's true. The stories are so full of sex. I have had to talk about some of this stuff in my podcast. And my dad, who's like 80 years old, listens to it. And he'll be like, oh, I listened to your episode. Oh. I'm like, shit, Dad, don't listen to that. It's talking about James having sex with people.
Oh, Dad. Well, you know, it is funny, actually. Funny. I would be, you know, it's interesting. There have been stories where people have these, they claim to have been abducted and then they do go to these like very strange worlds. Those are actually kind of earlier stories too. It's only after like the modern day UFO story we think of, that's from like the X-Files. You know what I mean? That's like the X-Files created it and then people, they didn't really create it, but it comes from a very specific place. But right. there's actually a guy that's really prominent on Twitter who claims that he like his whole thing is he got abducted by aliens and they just had sex all the time.
Oh,
and he was like, this is great.
I never want to go home.
Yeah. Like, why would I go home? It actually, it reminds me of I was just yesterday watching my family, we always binge watch the Treehouse of Horror episodes of The Simpsons. Mm. And the second season's Treehouse of Horror, the Kang and Kodos take them up onto the ship and they keep feeding them and they let them watch all the TV they want. And they're like, we're going to paradise. It'll be great. And Lisa finds the book that says, you know, how to cook man. And then, you know, they're like, no, this is just space dust. And they wipe it off and it's, you know, how to cook for men or how to cook for man. And they're like, right. you could have lived like gods on our pleasure planet forever, except for your, you know, untrustworthy ways. And then they get dropped back off. So I guess
really quick, I was going to say, it's really interesting that like these descriptions are so, again, they're so imaginative, right? And it's almost this act of being being retold or being told by men and observed, and the stories come back and it's this art, because if they're not, you know, if they lack imagination or they, that it's again, like, would they have like trees with, you know, where did that, how did that get, how did that come into to being?
Right. How
do
they,
you know what I mean? It's, this, how it's do they interesting. Like, that? Yeah. How did they imagine that if it wasn't like, again, imagined afterwards or like, I don't know. That's,
I don't know if you've seen, like, cool. When you watch or when you listen to the episodes, I picked out, if you Google Islamic art jinn, you're going to come up with some of the craziest like art you've ever seen. And I've been using a lot of them as title images for the episodes. They're all like hundreds of years old, if not older than that. And it is truly fantastical, the kinds of imaginative monsters that have been like illustrated in these things. And yeah, I don't know if it's just coming out of the artist's imagination, if they're hearing stories and this is how people are describing these things or experiences to them. There's some really old literature that has very specific descriptions. It'll say that this jinn is blue and he has fangs and he has this many heads. And it's like, you know, that would be pretty descriptive. The feet of a duck, you know, just crazy stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But clear, I don't think they're all described that way. So, but there is a real, it's interesting. There's a real sensuality around jinn lore that I don't find so much in Western folklore. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So I guess we only have like 10 minutes left here. I really would love to hear. So when you were growing up, right? What was the scariest jinn story you can remember? Or what's one that stuck with you?
Oh, gosh. The one that stuck with me was, and I actually relayed this at the top of one of the episodes, is there was a family, and I grew up in a family that was, and maybe this is why, like, I don't experience anything, and I wish I did, is because my family was like that. I've asked my dad, I'm like, Dad, you must have, like, grown up with jinn stories, like, back in pre-partition India. He's like, nope. nope. And I was like, damn it. Like, we're, like, the only Pakistani family that doesn't have jinn stories, and all of our friends did. And there was this one particular family that every single time we got together, there were four sons. They were all a little bit older than me, and since we were kids, it always scared the crap out of me and my siblings with their stories. And they came, they lived in America, but they came from this really remote village in Pakistan. And many of the stories that they told were stories that they had encountered themselves when they were visiting back home. And I think one of the scariest ones was they told about a time when they had landed in like one of the big cities and then taken a train back to their village because that's the only way you could have gotten back there. And it was late at night. Most of the passengers were asleep. The two younger sons were still awake. And there was a woman. It looked like a woman. She was covered in head to toe in like this black kind of gown, like a veil and everything, a burqa type of thing. And it looked like her head was turned towards them, but they couldn't tell if she was looking at them. And their mom was asleep and everybody was asleep. And suddenly she just kind of stretched her feet out in front of herself. And she was sitting diagonal to them on the opposite berth. And her feet were backwards, like completely backwards. And oh, yeah. And so when I was told that story maybe when I was 8 years old, and that has not just stuck with me. That I had, it struck terror in my heart. And then, you know, they said, well, you know, when they were terrified and they kind of, you know, like basically squished against their mom and tried to like look the other way. And then when they got to their village, they told others and they're like, oh yeah, you saw it. That was a djinn. I mean, that's how you identify djinn, is their feet. Like they can transform themselves, but they, for some reason, cannot transform their feet. So when I was young, I would always be like looking at people's feet and checking out, like maybe I could catch somebody. And, you know, they say also that, you know, it's in societies where wearing long robes, like think about the Middle East and other places like that, where people wear a lot of long robes, you don't see their feet. You don't know what you're dealing with. So, that was something that really scared me. Yeah. And she didn't do anything to them, but it was just like one of those things. But also, you know, we were always told, don't go out at night, especially as girls, with your hair out, because it will attract a djinn, and then that djinn will want you for the rest of your life, and he will not let you go. Like, it'll fall in love with you. And that always scared the crap out of me. But I personally think that was like some kind of like a tool of social control.
Sure.
Not necessarily reality.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that is my God.
That's a good one.
I'm going to be checking my wife's feet when she gets home tonight. I'm very afraid.
I'm telling you, it's like the little stuff, like, right? Like the next time you're in the supermarket or something, you're just going to be like, hey, you know, like, sure, I've rationalized this. I packed it away and then I'm going to be checking people's feet.
Yeah.
You know, when the djinn, there are certain places they like to inhabit, like ruins and cemeteries and graveyards. And I haven't been to Pakistan in 5 years, but the last time I went, my grandparents are buried in one of the largest graveyards in the country. And it is kind of like in this very center of the city, a major city, which is an incredibly loud, crowded city. But the minute you step inside the cemetery, and believe me, it's surrounded on all sides by carts and rickshaws and trucks. But the minute you step inside, it's like dead silence. And we've always been taught that animals can hear and see the djinn. And that's why you won't find them. And you don't find cats and dogs hanging out in graveyards because they can see them there. But we can't see them there. And that's always been a really freaky experience for me to go into this, like, just there's no wall between the city and the cemetery at all. It's like, you're like on the street and you take two steps up into the dirt and you're in the cemetery and it's huge, but suddenly there's like this eerie silence. And that's always been kind of spooky, pretty spooky.
Yeah. I've sufficiently freaked myself out a little bit.
No. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, Rabia, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure.
You.
Oh my goodness. Such a pleasure having you on. Everyone go check it out. I mean, if you haven't already listened to Serial and Undisclosed and checked out the story of Anand Syed, please go check it out. Just amazing work that you're doing. And yeah, come on again anytime, please. We'd love to have you.
Thanks so much. I had a great time, and I'm gonna watch The Mothman Prophecies this weekend.
Check it out. Yeah. It's pretty scary.
Thanks to you guys.
Except for Richard Gere.
Yeah, it's fine.
Except for Richard Gere. All right, guys. Thank you so much. I had a great time on the show.
Thank you. Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at madscientistpod or at Team Giant Squid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Because we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard.
Woohoo!
And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Damn It Chippy production.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.